This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry and get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, morning to you, and welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. That's me. I'm Mark. That is Kim St. Ange on the other end of the desk down there. Carl Middleman in here, and of course, we've got Sue Thomas keeping you up to date on all of the latest and greatest out there in traffic. Hopefully you don't have any problems. Another gorgeous start to the day, which is a tremendous break at the end of February. How about that? Not even March yet. And I saw some, we took a walk yesterday with our grandkids, and I saw some plants starting to shoot up out of the ground. Like, they're in for a big surprise. Because you know this thing's coming back with a vengeance at some point.
You think we'll have those single digits again?
I don't know.
Those are done. I know March can sneak up on you. Even early April, I know, can sneak up on you. I'm hoping that teens would be the lowest we would go from here on out. And, you know, we have daylight saving time coming. I think it's Sunday, March 9th, which means we'll get an extra hour of sunlight, or daylight, I should say, at the end of the day. Although, I guess, in the beginning, it'll be darker in the morning. But I'll take that extra hour at night.
That is a commitment I want Donald Trump to follow through on, is switching us back to just daylight savings time all the time. That should just be the standard in America and across every state. And then we wouldn't have, like, we wouldn't just have a hodgepodge of this, because some states are going to switch. Some are going to stay on standard. It's a mess. It wears me out every year. So
I think it also contributes to what they call the SAD, you know, seasonal affective disorder. Man, I mean, that's a thing when it's dark at, you know, 5 o'clock at night and it's freezing cold. That does get depressing day in and day out.
Yeah, it sure does. By the way, I want to give a shout out to the folks over at Guns and Hoses. They submitted their check for $1 million to Backstoppers yesterday. And that's thanks to everybody who shows up and all the corporate sponsors and donors, and very proud to say that Audacy, our station group, is one of those. Of course, Julie Tristan down the hall has been involved from KZK for a long time, and now we're happy to announce that 97.1 is going to be an official radio partner. We're going to be broadcasting as we did last year, but we're going to play an even bigger role this year, and I'm proud to say I'm going to be part of that. Anything we can do to help our first responders, you know, they gave some examples yesterday. Larry O'Toole, who's the new director of Backstoppers, executive director, told a heartbreaking story that years ago, one of an officer was killed in the line of duty, and one of his older children, who was still a teenager, had to work 3 extra jobs to help mom make ends meet and raise the rest of the family. And thanks to organizations like Backstoppers, that's not a problem anymore. If an officer dies in the line of duty, they step in. And the first responders, they die in the line of duty, they step in, they pay off mortgages, they take care of college educations, and it's an ongoing expense, and anything we can do to help with that, we're proud to be a part of that moving forward. So more details to go on that for sure. And by the way, while I'm on the issue here, you have an opportunity to honor first responders. If you got one, you've done something special for you, go to our website, 971 talk.com. Look under the contest page. Nominate your favorite first responder, firefighter, police officer, EMS, dispatcher, somebody you know that's done something special for you or works hard every day and long hours, and nominate them, and we'll take a box of food from Grillmaster Tony and feed their crew one day. I was warned yesterday, I got to be careful about that because, you know, some people have bigger departments than others. And I'm like, we'll do the best we can. Just keep those nominations coming, and we'll do that for you. All right, coming up, we got former Senator Jim Talent. I want to get his thoughts on the you know, it's all this Doge controversy and the use of Guantanamo Bay. Pete Hegseth was down there recently with Laura Ingraham, and we'll talk to him about that. Also, we're going to get a visit from Jess Christensen in the about 7:35 bottom of the hour. She's from Bear, and we're going to talk more about this bill working its way through the. It's already passed the House. And now it's facing opposition in the Senate, and it deals with Roundup, glyphosate. And some people think there are health concerns surrounding that. And we offered to let somebody from Bayer come in and tell their side of the story. They're pushing bills like this across the country. And I'll let them explain that to you coming up at the bottom of the hour. But right now, we're going to get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
You're not going to like what I'm saying next. But we are in the middle of a totalitarian fascist coup in this country, and we don't call it that.
That's Jeff Jarvis, some crazy political science professor from, you know, who knows you somewhere, and he's on CNN yesterday. Scott Jennings is just shaking his head at this guy, that we're already in some sort of oligarchy, tyrannical situation in America.
If you could speak directly to Elon Musk, what would you say?
Off. That's it.
Hey, speaking of nuts, there's Jasmine Crockett, the new face of the Democrat Party. She's a congresswoman from Texas, but actually has ties to the St. Louis area. Aren't we proud?
We haven't gotten responses. Usually that means that maybe that person doesn't exist, or that person doesn't want to say they're working for another company while being paid by the United States government.
Woo! Yeah. Donald Trump yesterday in the cabinet meeting backing up threats to fire more government employees if you can't explain what you did last week. Or are you working for another company because since you work from home, nobody will know anyway. There's just lots of questions out there. Maybe the percentages are small, but I think we're going to get to the bottom of a lot of waste in federal government.
I think the right way to handle a situation like that would have been to probably say it was, you know, nobody's business and to resign.
Wow. What do you think about that? Sounds like Monica Lewinsky. Did you hear that? She was a little tough there on the Call Her Daddy podcast. Now, of course, that's famously the same one Kamala Harris did. So she's clearly still a lefty. But she's in hindsight, now that she's a grown woman, she is very unhappy with how Bill Clinton dealt with their little escapade in the Oval Office.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he could have handled that whole situation a lot better. I'm sure Hillary Clinton, of all people, thinks he could have handled that situation a lot better.
You think?
And I'm also dumbfounded that this Call Her Daddy podcaster gets so many big names.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't get that one either. I just always go back. Whenever I think about that, when you brought up Hillary, I always think of this particular soundbite.
You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette. I'm sitting here because I love him and I respect him and I honor what he's been through and what we've been through together.
Yeah, we've been through a lot because, he sexually assaulted an intern.
She just reminds me there of the unsinkable Molly Brown from the Titanic.
Yeah, with the little southern accent that she used to put on when she needed to from her days down there. She grew up in Chicago, but she sounded like that coming out of Arkansas. I mean, maybe there may not be a bigger fraud in America than Hillary.
No, I think
Clinton.
That southern accent is very thick in Chicago.
Yeah, you hear it there all the time. But when I heard Monica Lewinsky say that, play the full bite for the people, Carl. Go to cut 13, please.
I think that the right way to handle a situation like that would have been to probably say it was, you know, nobody's business,
yeah,
and to resign, you know, or to find a way, to find a way of staying in office that was not lying and not throwing a young person who was just starting out in the world under the bus.
Did he throw her under the bus? I can't remember. What exactly did he say about that?
I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time.
How old was Monica Lewinsky at the time again?
She was an intern in the White House. She had to be 19 or 20, I would think.
Mm.
I mean,
just over the legal age.
Yeah, she was legal, but obviously, yeah, way before the hashtag Me Too movement there, I guess, because the left had no problem with that whole situation. They were just embarrassed by the blue dress. That's how that came down. All right, coming up, we'll get to former Senator Jim Talent, get his take on the big cabinet meeting yesterday with Elon Musk in attendance up there in D.C. The left, oh boy, do they hate Elon. And he's getting death threats these days. We'll be back in just a minute.
Cannot sustain as a country $2 trillion deficit. It's not an optional thing. It is an essential thing. That's the reason I'm here. And taking a lot of flack and getting a lot of death threats, by the way. I mean, I'd like to stack them up, you know. But if we don't do this, America will go bankrupt. And obviously that can only be done with the support of everyone in this room.
Elon Musk there, and we've got former Senator Jim Talent on the line this morning. Jim, I don't know if you got to see any of the sound from that cabinet meeting yesterday, but Elon Musk admitting, because of all this vitriol from the left, that he's getting multiple death threats constantly.
Yeah, I'd be, frankly, given the way things are today, I'd be surprised if he wasn't, because they're challenging the status quo on a number of different levels. So part of it is just the money that's being wasted. Part of it is the jobs that are not being done. You know, there's, like, for example, saying that people have to go back to work.
Yes.
You know, now I don't have a lot of confidence, Mark, that that federal employees working from home were producing anything like the volume of work that they should have been. Which isn't to say that there weren't some people working from home and doing their jobs. I really fear that there was some pretty blatant sort of, okay, I'm working from home, pay me, and I'm also going out and I have another job, that sort of thing. So there's a lot that needs to be cleaned up here, and they're unsettling things, doing a lot. We also need to test the limits of presidential authority. And one of the things I hope that comes out of this is court rulings that presidents have authority overall policy-making employees, even those that have to this point supposedly been covered by the civil service laws.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? Because yes. I think you have to control those who make policy in your administration to ensure that the policy you were elected to do by the people actually is the policy of the executive branch.
I heard yesterday that it's estimated only about 20% of the federal workforce was actually working in an office somewhere. That means 80% of them were working from home. I mean, obviously, this is a leftover of the COVID restrictions and that were put in place, that they just never brought these people back to the office. It's unbelievable to me that the Biden administration let this go on for as long as it did.
Right. And of course, there are private sector organizations which are fine with their employees working at home. I mean, it can work, but I just have a sense that with federal employment, it's just not going to work that way. You need to be in the office so people can hold you accountable and try and make certain you're doing what you're supposed to do. So, again, I think this is a necessary process. It's going to take a while longer, and at some point, I think, the Congress is going to have to get involved. Now, right now, they're very busy doing the reconciliation bill, which is the number one priority. But when we get that done, then we move on to things like this.
Yeah.
Jim, did you by chance see the video that Trump put out on Truth Social? In my opinion, it was stirring the pot of, like, what he envisions as Trump Gaza. And it was, you know, glamorous beaches. Did you see that video? Like a statue of Trump?
No. Yes, I may have. Yeah, I didn't watch the whole video, but it strikes me that I saw that particular image of it.
Yeah.
He's doing, this is actually a pattern with Trump, and it's typically very effective. It's to hold out how good things can be if people will cooperate with the policy he wants, while at the same time saying, and if you don't, there's going to be costs and consequences. He's done that all through the Middle East. It's been very successful to this point. We're getting movement on that issue, Kim, for the first time in my memory, which goes back, you know, I went to Washington in 1993. And this is so obviously one of two possible solutions, which is to resettle the refugees. I mean, refugees typically resettle. This is not the first place we've had refugees. You settle them someplace else. And when you think of the tens and tens of billions of dollars have been spent there, Hamas has stolen it. We could have resettled all these people in, like, mansions for that kind of money. That's the most obvious. And the other is, if the Arabs are willing to do it, to put a government in place in Gaza that'll de-radicalize the Gaza Strip and also control Hamas. And so there are actually active discussions underway now. I still think the chance of anything happening is slim, but Trump has moved it in the right direction for the first time anybody can remember.
Yeah, and it hasn't. Right. They're now talking about things that they never talked about before.
Right.
Possible
right.
solutions, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, from Israel's point of view, Israel is going to protect her security, which means Israel is going to retain the right to go back into Gaza anytime that Israel thinks it's necessary to protect her own people. That was a given from this thing, from the beginning. They're never giving that up, and I don't blame them. And it's not their responsibility to solve the Gaza Strip. Remember, they occupied the Gaza Strip, I think, for about 10 years.
Right.
And then they were told that everybody in the world wanted them to leave. They left. And then Hamas took over, and we got what we got. So this is a possible solution.
It's gonna be fun to watch out. It works out, for sure. Jim, we always appreciate your time on a Thursday morning. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Yep, we'll talk to you soon. And it's interesting, did you see where Zelensky is apparently ready to sign on in Washington tomorrow that Ukraine deal on rare earth minerals that everybody said would never happen? Somebody's getting something done in Washington for sure. Coming up, we'll talk more about that Roundup bill that's working its way through the Missouri legislature. We'll talk to a representative from Bayer.
Well, I oppose it, Mark, for several reasons. But these bills essentially provide, as you stated, I mean, it provides blanket immunity for the makers of certain pesticides and herbicides, like glyphosate. Herbicides that have been, linked to health problems.
So that is Missouri Senator Adam Schnelting. I had him on the show on Tuesday discussing this bill that is working its way through the Missouri legislature. It has passed the House. It is now over in the Senate. And what happens next is anybody's guess. Now, once we reported on this story, I wanted to make sure we could get somebody from Bayer, one of the makers of a Roundup and glyphosate, which is at issue here, to talk about this. Jess Christensen is joining us this morning, head of crop science and sustainability communications for Bayer. And Jess, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for giving us a minute this morning. I appreciate that. Obviously, you've heard all of the arguments against the bill. Adam Schnelting is one of the senators who says that he has concerns about it. Can you kind of tell people what the genesis of this bill was and why Bayer thinks it's so important?
Absolutely. This bill is really about protecting agriculture when it comes to producing the food, fuel, and fiber we need. If farmers don't have access to safe, affordable products like Roundup or other crop protection products, they just simply are not going to be able to produce enough food, and prices will go up for us as consumers. So I think to some of the questions, Mark, I think these are great ones to address today. So blanket immunity just simply isn't true. This bill is really about upholding a very rigorous scientifically based process that these products go through when they get registered to be sold or to be used by farmers. So it's really about the label, and that's it.
It's about the label. If the Missouri Independent wrote a piece on this, and they said that the person who sponsored it, Dane Deal, the representative out of Butler, would make the label required by federal pesticide regulators sufficient to satisfy any requirement for a warning label regarding cancer under any other provision of current law. So, in other words, that's what it's about, that if there's a warning label on it, that should be enough to let people know without all of the litigation that has occurred, correct?
Yeah, the label is a really good place to set a bit of context. So when we, or any manufacturer of these products, not just Bayer, when we go through the registration process, at first the EPA and then the state level, that process also includes, based on all the hundreds of studies that we have to conduct that are very much mandated by the process itself, not studies we choose as a company, not data we only choose to submit. These are very, very structured and controlled studies. Those studies are reviewed. As part of the process to get it registered, the EPA will say, okay, based on all this data and the way the product's going to be used, you have to label a certain way. The label is the final step in the registration process. So actually, a company like Bayer would be out of compliance if we added something to the label that just was not true. And so basically, what the bill is saying is that process is the process we have today in this country to regulate products. And we should be regulated. These are products that are used by millions of folks around the world. So let's make sure they go through a really rigorous process. So if you do that and you label according to that, then we have satisfied the requirement for health and safety warning.
So if you change the label, if that's what ultimately happens, Jess, then it sounds like that would give Bayer some level of immunity from litigation. We know that they've paid out billions of dollars in lawsuits as recently as 2020. So my question would then be, if this glyphosate is safe, then why would Bayer as a company need any level of immunity?
Yeah, that's also a wonderful question. So, you know, the way that the litigation industry works today, there's claims that are being made that really don't have the backing of science. And so for in our case, we have paid billions of dollars. You're absolutely correct. We reserved $16 billion, as a matter of fact, to help resolve some of these claims and cases. We've spent over $10 billion of that already. And so, you know, that's why we as Bayer are standing up amongst many other members and coalitions across the country, both at the federal and state level, to really talk about this and bring more discussion and transparency. So in our case, what we're trying to say is, listen, we have to have some stability and consistency based on science and based on the regulations, the law. If those are followed, then we should not be sued for a failure to warn. Now, that does not mean that it's going to stop people from suing, nor should it, right? When it comes to other things like warranty breaches, other product failures, you know, we actually think that companies should be liable if they do harm. And that's why I want to make sure that people really understand this is not blanket immunity by any means.
Sure. And in terms of what happens, I know you're making this effort in a number of states around the country. If this doesn't pass, for example, it sounds like the suggestion is that Bayer might get out of the glyphosate business. I mean, and then farmers don't have that option. Is that the concern here?
Yeah, I mean, you just heard me say that the $10 billion we've already spent, it's actually over that already. You know, I'm a scientist by background, and, you know, I grew up in southern Missouri myself. I'm a proud Missourian, and I think about all the innovation that we need, our farmers need. It's hard to farm, and so a company like Bayer, we need to be putting that money into our R&D engine. creating innovation is expensive. And so, you know, we need to keep on top of all the challenges farmers have. It just doesn't make business sense to continue, honestly, right? If you're going to have to continually pay out billions and billions, that's just not a sustainable business model. We've been pretty clear on that. That will have impacts on the farming community. And so we're not the only producers of glyphosate. But, you know, if glyphosate isn't available, there's been studies that say that, you know, the cost of food for an average family of four here in the U.S. could go up by nearly 40% or more. I mean, this is how important these crop protection tools are when it comes to the production of food, and then ultimately how much we're paying at the grocery store. So, you know, I think it's critically important that people understand that the rigor that these products go through. Roundup's been on the market for over 50 years now. And it's not only the EPA here in the U.S., but no global leading regulatory authority around the world has found any link of glyphosate to cancer.
You know, I'll be the first to admit I'm a skeptic about all of this. And there have been studies, though, that have linked it. And, you know, I just think about, yes, there are studies that say it's safe, but I think about, you know, potential ties to Bayer or other companies that produce it that might have some monetary incentive to want to say that, to have that finding. It comes off questionable to me, you know, when you think about, for example, the FDA for all of these years saying red dye 40 and all these other things we find in food and so much of the food that we're feeding our children. Oh, that's safe. Come to find out it's not safe at all. So what's any different from this with these studies that have, in fact, shown that there is some sort of a link? I mean, isn't that enough to say, hey, you know what, let's pump the brakes here. Let's really investigate this and make sure that there's not anything that could be harmful?
Yeah, the how the process works for companies and by our government itself through the EPA, if there is any finding of new data, so once a product's registered, like Roundup, I just said it's been on the market for 50 years, right? So there's a couple of things. That once it's registered, it gets reevaluated at least every 15 years. But in between that, if there's any new data that is substantiated, that's peer-reviewed, that's flagged by anybody could submit some concerns to the EPA or the state authorities. And I failed to mention this before. Products go through two levels of reviews. Federal level at the EPA, and then the final say is the states. So Missouri has its own process that it goes through and reviews the data and says, okay, yes, you can actually sell and use the product here in the state of Missouri. But if there's any concern, and somebody can submit that and say, hey, we think there's a problem with this product, then the EPA will reach out, and we're obligated as a company, if we have any finding, we're legally obligated to flag that through an official process for reevaluation. So I get the skepticism over big companies, and you know, I think I get it. I get some people like big companies, we don't like big companies, but the reality is we're held to an extremely high standard, as we should be. And there's no behind the scenes things going on with data or, you know, what's submitted, what's not. I mean, we would personally be liable for that, right? Not only as a company, but our employees would.
Sure.
So, for example, I was in regulatory and I used to have to sign some of those dossiers that would be submitted. If I would forge anything or misrepresent any of the data, I could literally go to jail. I mean, I'm a mom of two kids. I have a husband. I am not going to jail. I love working for my company. So I think it's important that people understand how rigorous and strict this is, really.
Well, and I know there's yet to be a vote on it in the Senate. We'll see how that goes. Jess Christensen, thanks for giving us the other point of view here. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
You bet. Yep, take care of yourself. Jess Christensen there from Bayer. Talking about this, and as I mentioned, Adam Schnelting and some other senators, I think Nick Schroer and a few others, have discussed potentially filibustering this in the Senate. So I don't know what changes between now and then. We don't know where leadership is on it. I haven't heard anything on that. it could end up tying up the Senate if there's a filibuster, and then you're delaying tax cut bills and everything else. So it's a complicated matter, but we wanted to make sure we got both sides represented here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, to be clear, I would not support this bill. I think about, you know, McDonald's, where they had that lawsuit after someone, you know, I guess spilled the coffee and they had, what, third-degree burns or something? Well, they were then forced to put that label, like caution, very hot, on their cups. But that wouldn't, to my knowledge, that wouldn't stop somebody from suing the company if, in fact, their coffee was so hot that it would cause a third degree burn again, because coffee should be warm, but not that hot. And so that's the concern I have with this, is it seems like they're basically saying, well, hey, we're going to check the box and say we put the label on that it could this or it could that. But in no way should a company have immunity from litigation. That should instantly signal a red flag for people.
She said that they wouldn't have immunity.
Well, she said blanket immunity.
Wouldn't be immunity.
That's very different from just immunity.
Right.
At all.
Yeah.
Some level of immunity.
And they claim that
like
no studies have linked it to cancer.
That's not entirely true.
Well, I mean, somebody sent me a piece from the industry who said that I think I read this on the air the other day, that there had been a study somewhere from the World Health Organization, International Agency for Research on Cancer, that said it was a probable carcinogen. But that finding is also being disputed by, obviously, the industry. So I don't know. I just wanted to allow her to have a say here and let people know that's why Bayer is pushing this. I guess they're afraid that in this litigious society we have, where you can sue anybody for anything, at some point it doesn't make much sense for them to keep making this if they're about to get cost them billions of dollars a year in lawsuits.
I get that, and I'm so glad that we had someone on, because I think they absolutely deserve the right to defend themselves over this. So I'm really thrilled we had her on, and I appreciate her time and answering my tough questions, because I'm very open that I'm skeptical about this. I think there's so many things that they have all these studies that show that it's safe, and they go through all these rigorous regulations and blah, blah, blah. It's not just Roundup. It's so many things in our food, and it's bogus. And it takes decades and decades before people finally wake up and, for example, I keep going back to Red Dye 40, but finally see, oh, you know what? There is a connection to ADHD and all these other health issues that we're starting to see across the country.
I mean, there's that argument. I agree. But we'll see what happens, and it's in other states too where they're trying to do this. So let's get to a quick break. We're going to get to Kim on a Whim when we come back. Stay tuned.
Kim on a Whim.
Well, here's some good news if you have a pet. You know all the bills you have to pay if you go to the vet, or the dog food, or pet insurance if you have that.
Maybe bully sticks.
You need to tell people what you discovered is in bully sticks. But it turns out those expenses could be tax deductible. Did you know that?
I don't know, but if my wife's listening, she just about wrecked the car, because that would make her very happy.
Okay, so we have to get back to, by the way, you only qualify for these if you like foster a pet, or if it's a certified service animal. They say if you are like, I have a pet influencer thing, like your dog's famous on Instagram,
yes,
or as a guard dog, like a watchdog for your company, that could be tax deductible. But we were chatting about this morning, and somehow it moved to the topic of bully sticks, because that's what Mark feeds his dog. And Mark, tell us what bully sticks are made out of.
Bull fizzle. I found this out yesterday, honestly. I did not know it till yesterday. I was reading the labeling at the bottom of the bag, which, of course, is important, and it tells me that it's all natural parts, and it's bull fizzle, which I had to Google only to find out that it is bull penises.
I hope children are not in the car right now as their parents are dropping them off.
Well,
for school.
I mean, the kids aren't eating them. The dogs are.
They need to know not to eat them.
Well,
those.
The kids might. Here's the problem. If we don't have a dog, but I'll guarantee you, if my son saw a dog treat, he would pick it up and eat it, because he picks up just about everything else off the floor and tries to eat it.
This is economic sustainability. They're using every part of the bull. See? Mm-hmm. There you have it. Go get you some bully sticks for your dog.
Called bully sticks. Otherwise, it just seemed like a random name. No, it's very fitting.
Of the four of us, only Sue Thomas knew that already. I had no idea. Apparently, her bulldogs love them. So there you have it. Now you know. You've learned something today. Coming up, we'll get to Dr. Naomi Wolf, author of The Pfizer Papers, a new book on the COVID fallout. When we come back, stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.